snowboarding made its debut as an Olympic sport in Nagano. It's a hybrid of surfing, skiing, and skateboarding that has caught on in the past 10 years. My guest Jake Burton is one of the people who popularized the sport. He's been manufacturing snowboards for 20 years and owns the most successful snowboard manufacturing company in the world. The new Olympic sport has already had its share of controversy. Canadian gold medalist Ross Rabagliati had his medal revoked after traces of marijuana were found in his post-race urine sample. He appealed and got the medal back. The Austrian team expelled a member after he was accused of wrecking furniture and computer equipment following a late-night party at the team hotel. Jake Burton just returned from Nagano. I asked him if he thinks these incidents tarnished the sport's reputation.
I think that, you know, Ross's situation was, it was a difficult one because rules are rules, and I think people in the sport, when they made the commitment, and I think including Ross, accepted the fact that there was a policy against drugs, and I think that those of us that decided to go down this Olympic path and pursue it had to respect that. And I think as a sport and as an industry, there are a lot of kids doing our sport, and we don't want to encourage drugs because, and even marijuana, because it just has a demotivating factor, and we all know that. But I think to put a label on it as performance enhancing wasn't appropriate, and I think that they made the right decision to give him his medal back. And I also think that snowboarding was somewhat singled out in this regard. I think if they're going to have that policy and test for that drug, they should test everybody so sports like snowboarding don't end up getting singled out unfairly.
Describe the difference between the two main snowboarding events at the Olympics.
Well, the two events that they had were giant slalom and halfpipe. And giant slalom is somewhat similar to the skiing giant slalom, where there are gates set down the hill and you have to go around the gates. And you have two runs down two different courses, and the fastest combined times wins. And there's a men's event and there's a woman's event. It differs a little bit from the skiing event in that in skiing, the gates, which are what you go around, are more vertical. In snowboarding, they're sort of angled sideways, and you can really lean into the turn, which snowboarders tend to do, and it makes it a little bit faster. It's just a little bit different. The other event is the halfpipe, and that's clearly unique to snowboarding and much closer to skateboarding or surfing by nature. And the halfpipe is simply that. It is a half a pipe, you know, cut in half and laid into the snow. It's actually made just carved out of the snow, but that's the easiest way to imagine it. And so you're going literally down this pipe, and you've got walls on each side that run up to vertical on your right and on your left. So you're going up the left-hand wall, doing a trick, coming back into the pipe, shooting across the pipe, back up into the right-hand wall, doing a trick, coming back in. You're getting air off of each side of it. On some of the hits, they're called, or jumps, you know, you're either doing a spinning type move or sometimes a flipping type move or sometimes just a standard trick, and most of the tricks involve grabbing the board. And this is a judged event, which makes it, you know, obviously interesting, as we've seen with all the judged events at the Olympics.
The weather was pretty bad during the snowboarding events. There was rain and I think snow and some terrible fog during the giant slalom. How does that affect people's performances? Even the rain and snow, I can imagine that would be bad for the balance of the board itself, but it would throw the people off balance when their clothes got really wet. I mean, I'm sure you have your balance down to a science when you do this stuff and you're twisting and turning in the air.
Well, that was, you know, one of the problems that I think we had to deal with the Olympics, and stems back to the fact that ultimately the sport was put under the direction of a skiing federation from day one when it was put into the Olympics, which struck those of us involved in the sport as somewhat awkward. And the decisions that were made all along the way were made essentially not by the people that had been involved. Even on an association level, there is a healthy snowboarding association that have been overseeing competition for years, but they weren't involved in the Olympic process. And as a result, even having the events in certain weather conditions were more or less out of the hands of the athletes and the people that they're accustomed to working with. And consequently, I think some events were held in conditions that they probably shouldn't have been held in.
I know one of your concerns is this. You think snowboarding is a very individualistic kind of sport, and yet it's being treated now as a team sport. Where do you think that there is are certain kind of individualistic expressions that can't be expressed now because of the emphasis on the team as opposed to the individual?
Well, I think the simplest area is that of uniforms and coaching and this sort of team mentality that the Ski Federation tends to apply to their sports, and athletes being forced to wear a uniform not only at the Olympics but at every event throughout the year simply based on their country. And it's very difficult to simply look and tell the difference between two different American athletes, which might have completely different personalities and appeal to different fans, if you will. And then to take it a step further, it goes into coaching. And the skiing model is that, well, you have a coach and there's this team coach, the U.S. team coach, and you've got to get along with that coach. And if you don't, you know, you might not be on the team, or who knows what might happen to you. It's more or less out of your control.
So you'd like to see personal style be a part of snowboarding in the way it is, in the way that it is in figure skating and ice dancing.
Yeah, I mean, snowboarding, if you watch people ride, and especially in the freestyle events, there's a tremendous amount of style and individual style that goes into them. The idea of trying to make a team out of freestyle snowboarding is just runs against the nature of the sport. Tricks alone, riders spend a lot of time, much like a figure skater will, working on their individual tricks, and they don't really want to share them with anybody because somebody else might see that trick and pick it up and boost it, and the next thing you know, they're doing it at the next event. They might be doing it better than you, and it's just a very individualistic sport, and it's also very private, I think, the training for the sport.
Jake Burton owns the world's largest snowboard manufacturing company. We'll talk more in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Jake Burton. He's been designing snowboards for 20 years and now runs the largest snowboard manufacturing company in the world, which is based in Vermont. He just returned home from Nagano, where snowboarding made its Olympic debut. Let's talk about your role in popularizing snowboarding. What was your first encounter with an early version of the snowboard?
Well, when I was about 14 years old, this is back in the late 60s, I got a Christmas present. It was something called the Snurfer, which was a product that retailed for about $12 or $13. And it was a sled-like version of a snowboard. You did stand up on it, but it didn't have any bindings or any edges or P-TEX base. It was very crude and simplistic, but really, the minute I got on it, I felt that there was an opportunity for it to become a sport. And the people that made that, they sort of let it run its course. And by the time I graduated from college in the late 70s, 77, nothing had happened. And I still felt that the opportunity existed, so I started the company.
And what was your ambition? What did you think snowboarding could be? I don't mean in terms of its popularity, but in terms of what the sport could look like.
Well, I had no idea, to be honest, that snowboarding would ever even be done on ski areas. I'm often given credit for having this great vision, and it's very undeserving. I simply saw it as an activity that was fun, and I'd done it on sort of sledding hills. The Snurfer wasn't something that you could ride on ski areas, so I saw it getting beyond sledding hills, but being more of a backcountry thing, an alternative to skiing, and something that you didn't have to buy a lift ticket, and you could just go do on local hills.
Now, why did you prefer it to skiing, or did you prefer it to skiing?
Well, I think the minute you get on a snowboard, you understand why it is growing so rapidly and often at the expense of skiing. The equipment that you're using is far more comfortable. You've got soft boots that you can run around in or drive in. You don't have poles that are, you know, literally spears in your hand. You don't have these metal bindings holding you on, and you don't have two skis that can go in different directions and put your body in all sorts of awkward positions. You're on a snowboard, you've got these comfortable boots, and it's a board sport, and you're literally surfing down the hill, and that sensation coupled with that comfort is just makes for a great activity. It is just so much fun, and that is why it's grown so much, and that's why one reason I love doing it. I've devoted my life to it.
You saw snowboarding initially as being an alternative to skiing and an alternative to sledding. But now it's a kind of companion to skateboarding, with some of the twists and jumps and moves being quite similar to what kids do in concrete parks. When did those jumps and twists and turns start entering into snowboarding?
Well, snowboarding, first of all, does have its roots as a board sport, and all board sports trace back to surfing. And board sports, I think, as we you know, enter the next millennium are definitely what's happening on a participation level, and simply because they are so much fun and the sensation is so pure. Skateboarding had an influence very early on because skateboarders simply were able to pick up snowboarding more quickly than anybody else. And skateboarders were younger, and it was interesting that I completely misread the market. I thought the market would be people like myself who were in their mid-20s or early 20s, had gotten out of school, had maybe had a snurfer, and it turned out that that wasn't the market. The market was much younger kids that, just like myself, when I got my first snurfer, and they were skateboarders or skaters, and all of a sudden they started applying some of their thought to the sport, and a guy named Terry Kidwell was the first guy to develop a freestyle snowboard with a round tail that you could ride both forwards and backwards. And from there, things really started to take off.
Are there certain stereotypes, some of which perhaps are true, about the difference between people who gravitate towards snowboarding and those who gravitate towards skiing?
Yeah, there is a difference, and that's youth.
And right, there you go.
Yeah, it really is. When I started Burton and snowboarding was in its infancy, if you'd go to Wisqueria, what they were doing to attract kids is they were building video arcades in the basement of the base lodge. And now, to take it 20 years ahead, skiers are building half pipes, they're building parks, they're building all sorts of amenities to attract snowboarders. And what's happened is a whole segment or whole demographic that was never on the mountain or had more or less abandoned the mountain was back on it. And once you get, you know, a bunch of teenagers on the hill, things are going to change. And I think ski area operators can handle that and realize that what's going on, and they never took offense to it. You know, when I was a kid skiing growing up, I mean, skiing had a lot of energy at the time. And when we were punks, just like, you know, snowboarders are punks now, and we'd spit off the chairlift. But now if a snowboarder spits off a chairlift, well, nobody should spit off a chairlift, but it's not the fault of the sport. And I think that people are getting over that and they're realizing what's going on.
Why is it, do you think, that many teenagers now are more interested in snowboarding than skiing?
What happened to skiing was, I think skiing got caught up in this elitist direction, and it wasn't about how great your performance was or how much fun you were having, but it was how new your equipment was and how fancy the car was that you had your skis on top of it. And snowboarding never got caught up in that. It was always very soulful, and we've kept track of what's gotten to the sport to where it is, and we haven't lost that. And I think that appeals to kids, and I think that, you know, kids do look for something different, and this is clearly something that was fresh for them, and consequently they gave it a shot. And once people try snowboarding, they tend to get hooked on it very quickly.
What would you like to see change the next time there's snowboarding in the Olympics?
Well, I think that radically change the sport and turn it upside down, which essentially is what happened in these Olympics. The lifestyles of the riders were altered. All of a sudden, they were forced to compete on this FIS, which is the Ski Federation Tour, to gather points to qualify their countries for the Olympics and earning quota spots. And all of a sudden, we had an official mascot for the U.S. snowboarding team, which was a Muppet character called Animal, which just everybody involved, the riders in particular, I think took real offense to that. I mean, we've talked about sort of stereotypes of snowboarders, and here they're only sort of encouraging that on their part, and we're trying to bust out of that mold. And I think keeping the sport as open and as free as it's been, and keeping the emphasis on individualism, I mean, that's clearly why snowboarding has grown, and in many situations grown at the expense of skiing. Obviously, in the Olympics, that's a very nationalistic event, and it has to be handled that way. But what's going on right now is the Ski Federation is using the Olympics to leverage themselves into taking full control of the sport. And what I think a lot of the political topic comes down to is, in the long term, do we want to build this, have this U.S. team and this huge bureaucracy overseeing it, or do we want to develop individual athletes in this country? And I think that what's important is the athletes, and that we develop them through a free enterprise system, that they pursue their athletic careers by choice and not through a system and sort of being overly coached. I think that if we develop heroes and younger riders aspire to get to that status and they chase those heroes, that's what's going to make this sport and the best athletes in the long run. And I think that what's going on with the Ski Federation and in the U.S. in particular is the objective is to build a bureaucracy and then take athletes and then just channel them into the Olympics and win medals. And I think that that's an antiquated approach to competition, and I don't think it's going to work. I think that this country's got a great heritage in free enterprise system and letting the cream rise to the top voluntarily, and I think that's how we should let it happen.
Well, Jake Burton, thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, great.
Jake Burton owns the largest snowboard manufacturing company in the world.